Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey guys, it's Allie. Welcome back to In for Life, the podcast. This is episode 323, called Emily Oster. This episode is brought to you by Belly. Are you thinking about growing your family? Whether you're just starting to plan or are actively trying to conceive, preconception health is key. That's where Belly comes in. Belly has vitamins to help both women and men optimize their health before pregnancy. With essential nutrients like folate, iodine, and zinc, Belly ensures your body is ready for this exciting next step. Belly goes beyond basic vitamins. Their unique formula supports reproductive health, hormone balance, and fertility, all while being made with the highest quality ingredients. Plus, Belly is created with only clean ingredients so that you can rest assured that you are making a safe choice for you and your future little one. When it comes to starting your family, take the first step with Belly. Give yourself and your future baby the best foundation for a healthy start. Visit bellybaby.com today and use code IAF15 for 15% off your first order. That's bellybaby.com, B-E-L-I-B-A-B-Y, for a healthier tomorrow. Belly Baby, because healthy beginnings start here. Thanks, Belly. Guys, if you are going through a fertility journey or building your family through ART right now and you need support, please come check out Fertility Rally. We would love to have you. We have 4 to 5 support groups per week virtually, so you can be anywhere in the world. We have 3 private Facebook groups. We have IRL and virtual events, and we have so much more going on. So no matter what you're going through, please know you're not alone. Check us out at fertilityrally.com, or you can DM me at Fertility Rally or In for Life Stories on IG. Also, my first children's book, Work of Art, is available on my website, which is infertileafgroup.com. You can check it out there and see the story of how I told my son, Sonny, that he was born through IVF. And the second book, the second work of art story, is coming later this year. So keep your eyes out for that. But check out the first work of art at infertileafgroup.com. Okay, so this is another expert mini-sode today, and my guest is Emily Oster, who is a professor of economics at Brown University. She is also a best-selling author and the founder of ParentData.org. And today we're going to talk about something that comes up on the show all the time, so I wanted to get an expert's opinion on it. It's sex ed and what we should be teaching the next generation after us about sex ed and fertility and birth control and all the things. So she knows her stuff. This is a fascinating chat. And without further ado, this is Emily on Infertile AF. Hi, Emily. It's so good to talk to you today. Thanks for doing this.
Hi, Allie. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course. So I have to start off and say that I saw this article that came out in USA Today that really, I like bookmarked it, sent it to a bunch of people. The headline was, "Should Teens Be Learning About Fertility and Sex Ed?" And you were quoted in that article. And I want to talk a lot about that today with you. That is something that is very important to me. And, you know, let's just kick it off with, what's your stance on that? Should they be learning more about fertility and sex ed?
They should be learning more about fertility and sex ed. I mean, I think that, so let me tell you what I think would be the best, which is if we could do another sex ed when people were like 23.
Totally.
Where we could talk about, like, okay, now you're getting to a place where it's more likely that you'll be trying to have kids. And we could talk about what you should know about your fertility and what you should know about the relationship with age and what you should know about egg freezing. We could talk about all of these things. We don't have that. And so we do have this moment in, you know, high school in which we are generally talking to people about sex. So that feels to me like, okay, that's our chance to do this stuff, even if it isn't maybe the perfect time. If I were the dictator, I might dictate the message to be sent a little later. But I think this is a really important opportunity to educate kids. And let me say, it's not just education about your, like in service of procreation. It's also like people should understand, you know, what's a normal way for my menstrual cycle to go? How might I know that there was an issue? You know, endometriosis, it's sort of a typical amount of time someone takes to be diagnosed with that. It's like a decade. And that's partly because people don't know that like the experience that they're having is outside of the norm in terms of pain or whatever else it is. So there's just so much opportunity to like both affect fertility later, but also just affect people's lives in a positive way if we spent more time with education about these issues and you know, maybe cut down a little less on like having babies is the worst, which seems to be.
Absolutely. I mean, okay, so much to unpack here. I have like a million questions spinning through my head, but let's talk about endo quickly. So it impacts about 10% of women, right? I mean, I remember having friends in high school who had it and they would like miss school because they're, you know, they weren't diagnosed with endo yet, but they were later, but they were like, my period's so heavy or they were in so much pain. And I think that, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Like, that is not normal, right? I mean, women need to know, and young women in particular, if you're having these symptoms, like that's not how a period is generally supposed to be. Is that right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, exactly. That there's a sort of an amount of discomfort and pain and, you know, bleeding, which is normal and sort of typical. And then there are versions of that with endo that are beyond the norm. And I think part of what's hard in the diagnosis here is you have only your own experience, and like pain is subjective, but also often dismissed. And so people are like, oh, I have debilitating menstrual cramps. They're like, yeah, that's what it's like, you know? And
yeah, they're like, suck it up. Sucks to be a woman.
You know? And it's like, well, actually, there that may be indicative of a problem. And so I think just, you know, helping people understand kind of what's the range of normal, but then also just saying, hey, if this is outside of what you think is reasonable for you, it is worth asking. And I think that is a kind of advocacy that comes up over and over again. I mean, I write so much about pregnancy, and I think it comes up there. You know, people talk about like, well, how much vomiting is too much so that I should seek care? It's like, well, is it interfering with your life?
Right.
If so, ask. And it isn't like there's an amount of pain that is like everyone should be able to take. So I think there's a little bit of just helping people understand, like, it's okay to ask, it's okay to say that you feel like this is too much for you.
Yeah.
And in many cases in endo, it really is too much. And there are treatments or, you know, certainly they should be under care of a doctor.
Right. Absolutely. So I want to back up to when you were growing up, what was your sex education like? What did you learn in school?
So it's so funny. I was thinking about this the other day because I have a 14-year-old and trying to reflect on like how my experience. I remember
boy.
I have a 14-year-old girl.
Okay, I have a 15-year-old daughter. So yeah, right. Same boat. We should have a side chat later.
Sidebar.
Off the record.
So I remember in sort of late in middle school, they divided the boys and the girls, and we watched this video, and there was definitely like sperm swimming in the video, and that's kind of all that like maintains in my head. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure I had any of this in high school at all, in terms of like just basic sort of sex ed. And I will say, when I got to the point of trying to get pregnant when I was 30, I read this book, Taking Charge of Your Fertility, which, you know, it is a very good book, but it's not like a wildly sophisticated book. It just explained like, here's how your menstrual cycle works. And here's how, like, I did not know many of those things.
Oh, yeah.
Which, you know, seemed surprising. I mean, I'm a person with like an awful lot of education. And this had sort of, there was just like some basic stuff that I didn't know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that, you know, this comes up on the podcast a lot. People I talk to is the lack of sex education, or, you know, we call it like the banana condom generation. Like people, you know, they bring in a banana and show you how to put, and that's kind of it. And it's always like, don't get pregnant. You're going to get pregnant. It's so easy to get pregnant. And I think I get it. Like on one hand, I understand if you're talking to high school students, you know, you kind of want to put the fear into them that like, you know, don't have a mistake or whatever. But I also feel like we really got shortchanged in terms of talking about ovulation or actually like how your body works. Because like you said, I found myself, you know, in the secondary infertility journey when I was in my late 30s, and I didn't even really know about ovulation or like embryo creation. You know, I thought IVF was something that you did if you wanted to have like multiples, like, and, you know, I've said that many times and I look like an idiot, but that's really what I thought. I didn't know what it was.
Yeah. And why would you? I mean, I think the other piece of this is we sort of think about the goal of kind of sex ed in high school as like help people not get pregnant, because largely it's goal. But even in the service of that goal, I'm not sure we should shy away from information, in part because people are going to get all kinds of information that is wrong. So I remember a thing I crystal clear remember from my childhood is people were like, you can't get pregnant while you're on your period. That was just like a thing. Everybody understood. You can have sex on your period, like you can't get pregnant on your period. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's not true. I mean, that's like, it is true that you, but that's not true.
It's not like a hard and fast rule, right?
It's not a rule. It's not a rule if you have, you know, depending on the timing of ovulation, the length of your cycle, you absolutely, sex during your period could result in pregnancy. And so there are pieces of that, which like, if we help people understand, you know, this is how it works. It's true that, you know, they might conclude that it is more difficult to get pregnant than was conveyed, but also they might learn a lot that would help them, you know, both not get pregnant and get pregnant.
Right. I mean, I think also just even talking about fertility at large, you know, and, you know, of course, when you're in high school, you're not thinking about having babies or any of that. But like, again, I found myself and so many other women, hundreds of people I've talked to, thousands, maybe even, you know, thinking like, oh, you can get pregnant at any age too, because you're looking in the media, you're looking at Hollywood. And I remember specifically being like, well, Halle Berry just had a baby and she's like in her 40s. Like, why can't I do that? You know, I didn't know anything about how you're born with the number of eggs that you're going to have your whole life. You don't create more eggs. You know, like I really, these are basic things I feel like that I didn't know about. Would you agree? Like we need to impart some of that too?
Absolutely. We need to impart some of that. And even very basic stuff, like, as you say, like eggs don't, you know, you were born with an amount of eggs. Those are the eggs you have. You know, here's the kind of cycle of how things work over time. We could talk to boys. I mean, do not neglect the boy side of the equation. You know,
sure,
they should understand their sperm. And, you know, how does sperm spermatogenesis work? There are a bunch of, you know, things that could have some long-term impacts on sperm. Mostly sperm is a more short-term activity. But again, all of these things are like just basic pieces of information that someone should have about how their body operates. And there's sex ed is our opportunity to give those pieces of information.
Right. I love your notion of doing, you know, almost like a 2.0 when people are in their like early 20s or something, you know, and just kind of a refresh or like a now here's the next part, you know, like we learned about this in high school, but now you need to know this part because maybe you're a little more honed in on family building. I think in high school,
also
you're not,
your frontal cortex is more developed. I mean, I think
that's
part
right.
of the issue. Part of the issue with sex ed is like, this is not a group of, you know, trying to teach sex ed to a bunch of like eighth graders,
right.
half of whom are boys all in the same room. Like that's tough. That's
totally.
A tough job. I don't want that.
Totally.
Job.
So, okay. Tell me a little bit more. You're the CEO of Parent Data, which is a data-driven guide for families. And one quote that you said in that article I was referring to is you said, I want kids to know things. And I was like, yeah, like stood up, start clapping. Like, I agree with you. So tell me why you're so passionate about this and how you, you know, got involved in this whole world in general.
Yeah. So I started writing about pregnancy and parenting when I got pregnant with my daughter, and I wrote several books, and then I founded Parent Data. And the goal in sort of both the books and in the website is really to help people know things. It is to approach the questions that we have in pregnancy and parenting by really giving people information to make their own best choices. And so we're focused on evidence and data and, you know, what do studies say, and focusing on getting the best evidence to people. But then really the core idea is like, if you know these things, then you can be in a position to make the best choices for you and your family. And so the core of everything I do is this information piece, which is why when we come to a question like, you know, fertility education, I think the beginning needs to be know stuff. And then we can build on that. How can you incorporate that stuff, you know, into the decisions that you want to make? Once you know how to not get pregnant, how can you use that to not get pregnant, but then later to get pregnant when you want to? Sort of core, just to say the core sort of parent data content goes from like trying to conceive through like early childhood, and we cover pregnancy, and it's all with the same data evidence-based frame.
Right.
This episode is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you're definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. The good news, we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. In fact, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are more than 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. Okay, guys, so here is the very exciting news. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code INFERTILEF at checkout. Again, that's happymammoth.com and use the code INFERTILEF for 15% off. Thanks, Happy Mammoth.
Why is life better with American Family Insurance? Because every policy comes with something very special. A trusted agent who's there to help protect your dreams by finding the right coverage at the right price. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
I think so many people who are trying to conceive, you know, you again, going back to what we were talking about, you think that, oh, if, you know, once I start to try, it's going to be easy because I haven't been trying all along and that's been working. So like, but if you flip that switch, like it's going to happen. And then we're all like, the rug is pulled out from you because you're like, holy shit. Like there's all these other factors coming into play here, age and, you know, just fertility in general. And you mentioned guys like male factor infertility, that's 50% of the issue with infertility these days. You know, a lot of the onus gets put on women, but men need to know this stuff too.
Absolutely. And I think there's a sort of balance here because I don't necessarily want to tell people like the first thing you should do when you decide to get pregnant is like freak out about how it might not happen. Because for some, for like many people, it does happen, you know.
So that is right. That is right.
I know people where like they go off the birth control and they pull the goalie, as my best friend says, and like you're pregnant right away.
Good point.
But I think that in that moment, when you start trying, there actually is an opportunity to, particularly if you are kind of edging, like many of us in a little slightly older age range when we start trying, I think there is an opportunity to say, okay, I'm gonna just learn a few things that will help me try to optimize my chances in the short term. And those are some very simple things, like have sex at the right time. Think about male factor infertility. So there are a couple of things like heavy marijuana use, having your testicles be really hot all the time that can in fact affect sperm count. And those are things where like you could learn that later, but you'd probably rather learn that early. So You're not 6 months in and you find out, well, actually the fact that like my husband wears really tight bike shorts and is like biking for 50 miles every day, like maybe like that's the problem. You could learn that in at the beginning. So I think that getting people some sort of basic information about at the beginning and then, you know, being in a position if things don't work for people to say, okay, like what are my options if, you know, I've gotten further along? And I don't think we have to have the conversation immediately, but I want that information to be there. So when in the moment when you say, okay, I think that it's time to do something more, you can have a fuller sense of what the option path is going to be there and not just be surprised at every stage.
Right. I love the option path. That's a great term. Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I've kind of come from both camps where I did have my daughter after I went off birth control and we started trying it only took a couple of months and I did have like a healthy pregnancy. So I kind of see it from both camps, like, and that's what I thought was going to happen again for the second one, but it didn't. And that's when I was like, oh my gosh, what is happening here? So
I also think people are so like secondary infertility is so surprising often because you just figure like it will be like the last,
like
one.
It was the last. Yeah.
And then 100%. I think it's and also people are often not, it's a whole other topic, but I think people are often like less understanding about secondary infertility, like from the outside, sort of like, Why are you so worried about this?
But yes. I've talked about that a lot too. And you know, you get a lot of like, well, can't you be happy with what you have? Right. You know, you already have one. Why are you putting yourself through this? And I was saying to someone yesterday, you know, the way that I explain secondary infertility is like, I'm not trying to be greedy. It's that it's coming from a place of love. Like I love being a mom so much. And it's not that my daughter wasn't enough. It was that she was everything. And I wanted more of that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the way that I explain it.
It's a very deep thing about like sort of what is the number of kids that you that you want. And this sort of feeling of like my family, like the way I would have described it after my first kid is like, my family's not finished. Like,
yeah, that's how
it's just, we're not done. And as soon as my son was born, I was like, okay, we're done. Like, not, right. not in a, like, not like, cause he's terrible or something, but just like, this feels complete. Like we, you know, we feel like a complete, like we're complete now.
That's how I felt too. It was like, there was this, somebody else is out there that needs to join our family.
They were waiting.
And, you know, it just did not feel complete to me yet. Yes, I totally agree. So Emily, you've got this book out, Expecting Better, Why the Conventional Pregnancy Wisdom is Wrong and What You Really Need to Know. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, since this is an infertility podcast, like pregnancy after loss or pregnancy after infertility, did you get into that at all? Or have you studied
at all? So in Expecting Better, it's sort of the frame is more basic, but we have another book called The Unexpected, which is about pregnancy after complications, including loss and often, you know, infertility coming with loss.
Yes.
And a lot of, you know, that book is really, like, some of that book is really about data, which is kind of my core, which is about like, what's the chance of recurrence of different things. But some of it is about like how to approach this and sort of how to have good conversations with your provider about what the options are. I think so much of, there are millions of things that are hard about infertility and about pregnancy after infertility and all these other things. But some of them are that people struggle to have the conversations with their doctors that will serve them best. And so the Unexpected, just this other book, is co-written with a maternal fetal medicine specialist. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to sort of help people think about like, what is the way you can come to your medical care that is going to serve you as well as you can be served in terms of helping you with decision making.
Right. What are some key learnings that you in researching and writing the book, like if someone's listening right now and they want to know, what are some better ways that I can advocate for myself or get better medical care, what would you advise?
So I think sort of one thing we advise is like, find someone who you feel listens to you. And that, like, if you have an option, if you have a place, if there's a moment of choice, and there are more moments of choice than you could, that you can quit your doctor if they're not working for you. But find someone who is going to listen to what you are saying and to think about your what's going to work for you. I think, you know, the second thing is we talk a lot about asking the question, why is this happening? Why did this happen to me? Or why is this happening to me? Which is a question, I think, whether it's about infertility or about, you know, loss or about complications, like that is the question we're all, like people are asking all the time. And the frame that we often give that question is, you know, why did this happen to me? Like, what did I do to be punished for this? Why am I sort of being made to suffer in this way? And our view is you got to switch, like that is a question you want to ask, but you want to ask it in a totally different frame. You want to ask it in a frame of like, is there something that is making me at higher risk for this that I might be able to do something about? So take a question you're already asking and turn it in your head from something where the only answer could be, you know, I did something wrong. Like, why did this happen to me? Because it's my fault, which is always where we are going. Turn it from that into, how can I understand if there is anything I can do? And then the answer may be, there is nothing you can do. There is nothing you did. There is nothing that makes you higher risk. You know, this happened just for reasons we don't understand. And then you can let that question go a little bit. So those are kind of at least two things we start with. And then we have some very practical advice, like when you go to the doctor, bring a notepad with all your questions.
Right. And I think that, you know, sometimes I think it's important also to share that as a patient, doctors should be willing to listen to your questions. Like if you have a doctor who's kind of annoyed that you bring something to the table or brushes it off, that's not okay, right?
No. And I think what's actually was sort of hard sometimes. We did this book tour around this book, and Nate, Dr. Fox, the guy I've written with, is like, you could never imagine a better doctor. You know, he is not dismissing you. All of his stuff is like, I sit down with people. I mean, he's like an amazing doctor. He's an amazing person. And people would ask, they'd be like, what if my doctor is not, like, how should I deal with, you know, my doctor told me to stop talking because he's busy. And like, you could sort of see in those questions, like Nate was so sad because of course that isn't how, you know, that isn't how people should be treated.
Right.
That just, should be treated, period.
Yeah. But it comes up again and again, you know, especially in the fertility world, is like feeling like a number, or there's even patients who never even meet their doctor. you know, they're always dealing with somebody else on the medical team. The doctor doesn't have enough time for them. And, you know, again, you know, I know it's sometimes it's not easy to just switch doctors, or, you know, there's insurance, or there's, you know, you live in a place where there's not many options or something like that. But what would your advice be to somebody, again, who's maybe not getting like the medical care that they deserve?
I mean, I think thinking carefully possible to switch, you know, is the first place I would go. And I think people, it is all sometimes very difficult to switch for many reasons, but I think more people feel like it's difficult to switch than even it is. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, partly depending on the relationship you have with your doctor, people can feel like it would be mean to switch. Like it would be mean to tell my doctor, you know, I don't like you. I don't think you're a good doctor. And I think the better frame is like, maybe this isn't the right doctor for you. Maybe this is a great doctor for someone else and it's not the right doctor for you. And that's fine. That's a totally reasonable thing to do. So trying to switch if that works for you. And then just remembering if you can't switch, that like, it's not your, somebody asked me yesterday, they said, you know, my fertility doctor told me to stop talking so much because they're in a rush. And I think, you know, that's like, that person's being a jerk. And all you can do is just be like, wow, that person, that is not on me. That is not my fault. That is not something I did. Like, that guy's being a jerk and that's his stuff or her stuff. Like, maybe there is something, in that case, it was a man, but, you know, maybe there's something else going on with them. I don't know. And it's not my stuff. And as much as you can, like, step out of that.
Yeah. Okay. Before we wrap, Emily, I'd love to ask you, you know, you're talking about, I want kids to know things. What are some other things in general, you know, that you, if you were in charge of like fertility education or just female, you know, women's health in general for the generation coming after us, what are a couple of things that you really, really think they need to know?
Yeah. So I think I would say, you know, basics about the menstrual cycle, I would love people to have some pretty detailed sense of like what are reasonable birth control options at different stages of life.
You know,
there's a wide range of options and they are appropriate, differentially appropriate at different times. And, you know, I think just giving people a sense of like, when might you choose an IUD and when might you choose the pill and, you know, what about the sponge? Are we still using that?
Right. So many of us were just like put on the pill, right? And that's
right,
kind of
exactly.
Slapped
and I
on,
would
yeah.
hope I hope that piece will be sort of less true for the younger generation. And I think then I will say on the other end, although I don't think I would communicate this to 14-year-olds, but I would love people to understand a bit more about perimenopause and menopause and kind of the other side of this, because that's a place where now maybe I'm just saying that because that is my space.
Yeah, hello, hi, same.
hello. And I think it's again, a place with a tremendous amount of misinformation where, you know, many things are attributed to, many symptoms are attributed, which probably do not belong there. And then symptoms are not paid attention to, which do sort of fall in that category. So, you know, helping people understand their, just the path of their hormones over their life seems really important.
All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. And thank you again to Emily Oster. Definitely check out parentdata.org and you can see all the cool work that she's putting out into the world and all the amazing things that they're talking about and doing. Also, come check out Fertility Rally if you need a safe place to land. We welcome everybody no matter what you're going through. So our website is fertilityrally.com. You can also check us out on IG at Fertility Rally. And if you want to check out a group, just shoot us a DM and we're happy to invite you so you can see what it's like and see before you commit to anything. And also, Work of Art is available on my website. That's my children's book about IVF and ART. And the website is infertileafgroup.com. So you can get a personalized copy, a non-personalized copy, send it to friends, send it to parents of kids through IVF and ART. And again, just help in normalizing the conversation. So thank you guys so much for listening. I will talk to you next time.